Blog Talk Radio.
Thanks for tuning in to Fire Engineering Talk Radio. Each week, our host will introduce you to a various cast of characters you'll only find here. Each host will share experience, knowledge, and expertise regarding their years in the fire service, allowing you to call in and speak with them live, an experience you can only find on Fire Engineering Talk Radio. So thanks for joining us. Enjoy and stay safe.
Good evening, everybody. Gary Graff on behalf of Engine House Trainings joining you this evening. Thanks for tuning in. We've got an excellent show for you lined out this evening. Got an individual some of you hopefully have heard of. His name is Brian Zunani with the Clayton Fire Department. He's the medical officer there. He's also the state coordinator for the Missouri Firefighters Funeral Assistance Team. So we're going to talk to Brian in just a minute. First off, Jason, how are we doing this evening?
Good. Can you hear me?
Oh, can hear you good. Can hear you good.
Okay.
How's things been good. How's things been going at the engine house tonight?
We've been busy today.
Oh, good.
Just a lot of small stuff and busy.
Good. Hopefully you'll be able to have enough time to join us for this evening.
Yeah, if you later on you hear that I'm not here, we're running. So we just finished up dinner and I'm sitting down, just got logged in, so looking forward to a good show. I know we got some classes coming up for engine house training. We've got our fall schedule pretty well full, and looking forward to that. We got one coming up this weekend at Doe Run near Farmington, Missouri, and Cole County in September, Boone County in September, and some other things coming up that are kind of in the works. So we're getting busy.
I know October we're going to be on the western side of Missouri, Kansas City area, and St. Joseph. Also Branson area beginning in November, Canyon County area. So, yeah, absolutely. Check on our website, enginehousetraining.com. They'll all be posted there as far as a schedule. Had a month or two off over the summer, which was a kind of nice little bit of needed break, but time to get back into it.
Yeah, it was nice to have a little bit of downtime. It just seems like whenever it hits us all at once and we're running left and right and, you know, getting some instructors out and props moved around and everything else, and it was nice to have a little time off.
Yeah. Looking forward to it, though. Spend a little bit of time back with you guys, and sure we'll have some fun with it.
No doubt. We'll all get in trouble.
Yeah. So unless you have anything else, we'll bring Brian in. And
I'll get Brian in here. And
like I said a while ago, Brian Zunani, he's a medical officer of the City of Clayton Fire Department, which is a suburb of St. Louis. He's been in that area since approximately 2002. He actually began his career in the fire service or in public safety in 84 in a suburb of Chicago. Since being in the St. Louis area, Brian's done one thing for not only the St. Louis area, but also the state of Missouri. He was a big asset as far as starting the Missouri Firefighters Funeral Assistance Team. Brian currently serves as the state coordinator. Currently, the state of Missouri has 5 fully functioning teams across the state, all of them dedicated to taking care of not only our fallen brothers and sisters, whether it be a line of duty death or just a natural causes. They're there to step in, assist the families, assist the members of the organization, not just in funeral planning, but also in any paperwork that needs to be done. And one thing as we go through tonight, talk to Brian, one thing he's really going to stress is not just waiting till an incident occurs or waiting till you have a death of a member of your organization or a line of duty death or, you know, not waiting for the worst to happen. A front load to do some pre-planning, and you know it's hard to sit down and talk about these things, but it's something we got to talk about up front. So with that, Brian, you got anything else to add to it?
How are we doing tonight?
Oh, we're doing excellent. Yourself?
Awesome. Doing well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. I'd just like to take an opportunity to talk about a topic that nobody really wants to talk about, and I don't blame them. You know,
we talk about the big one, and we always plan for the big one with all of our pre-planning. We train, we do all these things. We fail to plan for the big one within our own organization when, God forbid, we would lose one of our own, whether it be in the line of duty or outside of the line of duty. And sad reality is, this is a big incident that we have to pre-plan for so that we make sure that we do it right. Same reasons we pre-plan our major incidents, target hazards, things of that nature, so that we have a plan of action when it happens and we don't have to stop and think about it. The same thing applies when you lose a member of your organization.
Hey, you know, I know from attending some of your classes and being in contact with you as far as your dedication and drive that you have to this organization, and just kind of to tell the listeners a little bit of history of how the Missouri Firefighters Funeral Assistance came to be and how you guys got to where you are today.
Well, when I moved to the area in 2002, I actually had worked for funeral homes for quite a bit of time, as well as being a career paramedic and firefighter. There was, seemed to be a gap when a firefighter died in no actual organization. The opportunity presented itself to attend a class by the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation called Taking Care of Our Own. I took that class, and it seemed like a means to marry two of my passions. And we started out. I took the class, thought, wow, this is pretty cool. I think we should do something in the area. And unfortunately, at the time, we suffered a loss in the area. We went in and assisted that agency, kind of got some notice that, you know what, maybe this isn't such a bad idea. And it kind of grew from there. Sad reality is we've had, while we were promoting this concept, it seemed like every time we went out and promoted it, unfortunately, something happened, which we had the opportunity to birth, and it seemed to become embraced, and it didn't take that long. I was asked to create a plan as to how I wanted things to work. I was looking on a regional basis. I was suggested that I look statewide and create a plan, which we did. And I'm proud to say, through the hard work of many of our team members, we now have 5 fully functional teams serving across the state of Missouri. We have more resources than any other state at this point, as far as we have caches of equipment that are dedicated solely to this purpose, and as far as trained members to go out and help these organizations. So it's kind of grown somewhat out of need, and we're very proud of the success we've had.
Hey, you talk about the trailers and the different teams and the cache equipment they have. Just for a brief explanation, what equipment do you have available to those departments that are in need of your assistance?
Well, each of our trailers comes stocked. One of the things we found out helping organizations is organizations we help did not have the supplies necessary to, I guess, host a firefighter's funeral. So we started gathering the equipment because, frankly, a bit of it is expensive, and many organizations just can't afford to have it for that one or two times in assembled sets of bunting so that you can put bunting on your fire stations, on your apparatus for funeral ceremonies. We assembled some of the traditional firefighters' bell. We used the Liberty Artworks items that are made here in Missouri by our members of our firefighters, and actually some of the members of my own department work there and make these items. So the very ornate bells, pike poles, axes. We have flags that can drape the casket for non-line-of-duty deaths. We don't use American flags for non-line-of-duty deaths unless they were a veteran. So we have a firefighter's flag that we offer as substitution for that. We have the cords that hold the flags in place. Public address systems, parade flags, 20-foot by 30-foot American flags, white gloves, mourning bands, devices to help get the caskets up in the fire trucks and things of that nature. It's just a wide variety of items that most people have to scramble and assemble, and we just bring it in on two wheels.
Now, for the assistance of your team, if somebody were to have something, is there any fee or anything that's associated with the activation of the team?
No fees associated with the activation of the team at all. We actually encourage organizations to try and take care of their own the way they would like to. We offer our trailer for use even without the team. We offer guidance. Unfortunately, as you all know, we're all quite busy, and there's no possible way we could ever be at every firefighter funeral for our retirees, active duties, stuff like that. We will guarantee we'll have a team in place if it's a line of duty. We try and offer any type of support, but there's no fee whatsoever. You can use a trailer at no cost. We do ask that in return there's some disposables that if you elect to use them that you would reimburse us for them. But other than that, there's no. You can use anything in the trailer as long as we get it back.
Excellent. And I know a lot of the hard work that you've done as far as fundraising for these trailers. Where did some of the funds come from? As far as I know, a lot of organizations helped you and donated money and things, but just to give them due credit that assisted you, where did you able to get the funding to get this equipment?
Our funding source has come from quite a few different locations. We've been really lucky. Organizations who we've helped have stepped up and helped us back in return, and we're very grateful for that. We don't go out asking for a lot of funds because, frankly, when we're engaged in an organization helping them, that's not the appropriate time to be putting your hand out in our regard.
Mm-hmm.
So
Absolutely.
We rely on people's goodwill to come and help us out. The Firefighters Association of Missouri sponsored our very first response trailer fully stocked. They gave us the $13,000 to buy the trailer and all the equipment for it. So the FFAM was very instrumental in that. The Ryan Hummert Memorial Foundation has purchased a response trailer to assist other organizations. They fully funded a unit. And all of our big organizations, we've had the Chiefs Associations, we've had the International Association of Firefighters, we've had just many groups. Recently, the Pattonville Fire Protection District stepped up and held a fundraiser to assist our cause. It's just come from all different directions, and we've just been very lucky that people have felt that we're doing a good thing and they're willing to help us along with that.
And we talk about a member, a death of a member or a line of duty death and things whenever you step up. And we mentioned a little bit at the beginning as far as pre-planning for these certain events and doing things ahead of time and being prepared for these events. I guess this kind of to build up where we're going to go this evening. I guess let's start at the very beginning. If you were to come into an organization and say, okay, what do you have in place? And the organization says, you know, we have nothing. We haven't thought about this. We haven't considered it. It's not really something that people are comfortable talking. What's the first step we can take as far as planning for this misfortunate event to occur within our organization?
First thing we're going to do when you call asking for the funeral team, first of all, our number is answered by a 911 dispatch center who's going to take some initial information and page out our team members. Somebody should contact you back very soon. About your organization, we're going to start asking a couple questions. We're going to find out some information about the manner of the nature of the call. Is this line of duty, an active duty member that's died, a retiree, a special dignitary? And then we're going to ask if you have a protocol in place and if your agency has a protocol. If not, which most agencies don't, we have a protocol that we use that we've adopted from the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation, and we break our services down into three categories. First category is obviously line of duty death, and we talk to the organization, ask them what they think they can offer. And we try and get these before we ever sit down and talk to the family, because we don't ever want to offer a family something we cannot provide. Very important that we get on the same page as to what the agency's resources are, and then we start working from there. about line of duty death. We have a protocol for that. We have a protocol for an active duty firefighter death, and we have a protocol for a retiree or special dignitary. And we attribute it very similar to the military. I'm assuming most everybody's probably seen a military killed in action funeral, where they guard the casket until burial, full pomp and circumstance. And so for one of our military members who's killed in all of their members, have a scaled response, and we have a scaled response as well.
Are you there?
Yep, okay. I'm here.
Yeah, your phone was cutting in and out a little bit there.
I'm sorry about that.
Oh, not a problem.
Determine the agency's needs and assets, and then we start developing a plan as to how we can put things together and provide the tribute that they're looking for.
And you know, one, you hit on an important part there, and a lot of times people don't really put this into consideration when you have an active member, a line of duty death that occurs within your organization. You know, everybody talks about, you know, what they want to do for this individual, but like you said, stressing the family's thing, getting the family involved to make sure you're not doing something that they're either not comfortable with or not their wishes. And a lot of times it's not things we think about as far as, you know, addressing the family. We think, well, we're the family over here, the fire service family, and sometimes it gets left behind, and in the end that could create some hard feelings.
You're absolutely correct. We engage the family in all aspects. We usually assign family liaison, and that is our point person to go to that family and find out what the family wants. While we all consider ourselves families of our fallen brothers and sisters, we have to remember the immediate family takes precedent, and it is their desires that we follow. Sometimes this is tough for us to acknowledge or agree to, and doesn't mean that if the family says we don't want firefighter services, that doesn't mean we can't do a memorial at a later time, so to give the fire service a means of paying their respect as well. So we can work around family dynamics and things of that nature when they come up. But, yes, family is first, and we try and keep that at all cost.
Excellent. Awesome point there. You know, another thing, too, you know, some situations talking about pre-planned funerals. If an individual has a particular pre-planned funeral as far as, you know, how they would like the services to go, how do you handle the situation if it's okay, it's something a little bit more than what you would normally offer as far as an active member, if they wanted this full, you know, use the knee pumper as the caisson and everything like that, but it's not really a line of duty death, or it's not really something that seems appropriate for that particular, you know, that particular event, but that was their desire as far as their funeral list. How do you handle those types of situations?
I run into this quite often, and it's got to be handled with some tact and finesse. Obviously, we do not want to add feelings amongst families and stuff like that. But what we try to do is, one, we, again, stress that agencies adopt a funeral protocol or guideline so that everyone knows the expectations. The other thing we do is have at times actually talk to the families and say, you know, we have a standardized guide from the National Firefighters Foundation that we utilize, and what the request is falls outside of these normal guidelines. And we do back and parallel it to the military and say, you know, we follow the similar philosophy of scaled response to the manner of death. And then there's also online on our website that is probably one of the best articles I've ever read about planning a firefighter's funeral and how emotions take over. Summarize it real quickly. Full honor funeral for every member who's lost, regardless of the manner. what makes the line of duty death special now? Sacrifice. And we really try and hold true to that philosophy. It does get met with opposition. And we are not the funeral police. To guide people is to
you there?
Yes, sir.
Oh, your phone's cutting in and out a little bit again.
I'm on speakerphone. Sorry about that.
Okay, not a problem. You're kind of coming and going.
Okay.
You're talking about not taking away from the line of duty death as far as the sacrifice that they provided.
Yeah, we want to make sure that, you know, if we provide every tradition for every firefighter, we've almost liquidated the value of the line of duty death or the importance of the line of duty death.
Mm-hmm.
We really strongly encourage agencies to adopt a protocol so they do it the same way every time. That's one thing we do run into. Well, we received a call a while back. Well, the fire chief's wife died. We want to put her on the fire truck. And my question back was, are you going to put everybody's wife on the fire truck? Because what you do today is going to be remembered for tomorrow. And that's going to be an expectation for the future. That's why we really strongly, again, suggest that people adopt a protocol that allows them to follow it, and it gives you some, I hate to say the word leverage, but you can go back and say, well, look, we have a standardized procedure in place, and these are the things that we can offer you to honor the service that your loved one has provided. And we've seemed to get pretty good reception from families and agencies once it's explained.
And, you know, that's awesome. You know, I think the first exposure that I had to yourself and your team, you know, was a line of duty death here in the metropolitan St. Louis area. And at the time, I didn't even know that this thing existed. And just seeing, you know, some of the things that you guys were doing, you know, not just for the department and, you know, their pains and sufferings that they were experiencing, but also for the family. Notice that, you know, you had a member that was right there with the family at all times. As far as that interaction with the family, you not being associated with the organization who is experiencing this tragedy, have you ever met anything that's a resistance to say, you know, hey, you know, you're not one of us, you don't understand, you're not part of our organization, you know, and how do you handle that? You know, you're there to do good, but yet maybe they don't want your assistance.
Well, you know, we do get that occasionally. Sometimes there is some resentment. We really try and keep somewhat of a low profile unless the agency guides mm-hmm. us to take an over, so to speak. But we try not to take over. Our job is to come in, stay behind the scenes, guide the process from the background if that's what the agency wants. I'll tell you, we have had people come in, it's like, well, you're not with us. And rightfully so, this is not our loved one. But sometimes that uninvolved person, and I don't want to say uninvolved, but the person that can be objective is sometimes what's needed. Emotions take over. People want to run 1,000 different directions with this. And that we hope to be that somewhat voice of reason in the background to try and provide honors in the most appropriate way. But again, we try not to be intrusive to the agency, and we try and involve the agency. We want them to be a part of this. This is not our service. It is theirs. So we engage with them and find out what it is they want. We want them to be the people doing the casket vigil. We just guide the process from behind. We want them carrying the casket if that's the family's wishes. We just show them how to do it. And things of that nature. And we try to maintain some transparency within when we go into these organizations.
Now, what some of the things, you know, goes along with the pre-planning phase, what are some of the things as far as line of duty deaths, you know, that we should be concerned about? Okay, we want to pre-plan, we want to be involved, we want to be prepared. hopefully it's something that we'll never have to touch. You know, it's just, in my mind, it's just like doing our May Day Invert training. Hopefully it's a training that we'll never have to utilize. Where do we start? What are the most important keys as far as if a line of duty death occurs that we need to do right from the beginning?
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. We obviously hope this never happens. The best day in our life would be as if our tires on our trailers dry rotted, but that's not reality.
Absolutely.
You need to start looking internally. What are your resources? Do you have a plan in place? Again, I go back to adopting a protocol, standardized operating procedure or guideline. If something happens, do you know what you're going to do? What's going to happen? How are you going to handle things? Obviously, we would hope you would lean on us. Unfortunately, we've had just a tad bit of too much experience dealing with these, and we can guide you through some of the things that you should do and some of the things you should not do. Agencies, unfortunately, sometimes say the wrong things, and it actually could cost the family benefits or make the benefits process more difficult to achieve. So I would ask if the listeners out there, there's nearly every state has a person who's been charged with guiding the process from the National Fallen Firefighter Standards. If you go to the National Fallen Firefighters website, you can look up your state and find out who your state coordinator is. And they will have good resources for you and help you along in making sure to get your agency a guideline or a protocol. I don't think you should make it too tight because everything's got to be fluid in what we do because circumstances change. But also, you need to have a plan in action to at least get started until the resources could come in and back you up. Some of the things that I suggest strongly, and it's simple things you can do without even reaching out to anybody, is your members' contact information up to date. You know, I'm in a suburban career department, but our members don't all live within half hour, 45 minute geographical area from here. It's going to take time for us to find the family and to get to them.
And in that situation, okay, if you have a member that lives an hour and a half, 2 hours away, what do you do to notify that? I mean,
are you there? Hello? Did I lose you? Hello? Hello? I'm going to hang up and try calling back in here.
Oh, there you are.
Yep, there
sorry
I am.
About that.
No problem. I didn't know if we could hear me or not at that point.
Yeah,
I just lost everything.
Problem on my end. I apologize.
No problem.
But the question I was had for you was, you know, looking at generally our area that we're in the St. Louis metropolitan area, you know, some of these guys commute from as far as 2 hours away. You know, we're against the gun nowadays with, you know, technology as far as cell phones and texting and social media and everything like that. How do we beat the clock on that for notifying their family in an instance of a tragedy or, you know, just an injury, an on-duty injury?
Well, it used to be that we kind of fought the TV media, radio media to get to our families before names got released and stuff like that. Unfortunately, that is no longer the case. We are our biggest enemy in that regard.
Absolutely.
You know, Facebook, and which our team uses, is an awesome means of getting information out. Text messaging, awesome means of getting information out quickly. The sad reality is, unfortunately, it gets out too quickly. I think that's one thing we as firefighters need to do is if an incident goes down, we have to contain it within ourselves. You take a large incident where maybe it's on TV and there's a fatality involved. You know, I think it's okay to call your family and let them know you're okay, but don't tell them anything more. There was a sad story in our state where a firefighter died. A guy called home, said, look, you know, firefighter X just died, and I'm at the fire station. I'm going to be here for a while. Well, the families knew each other, and his wife called the other firefighters, the deceased firefighter's wife. Well, they hadn't made it there yet to tell
her. Oh, man.
Oh, my God. And you can imagine the frustration when she's like, oh, I'm sorry to hear about your husband. And she's like, what? And the lady finally realized and hung up on her three times. Not too long ago, an agency responded to a death of one of their members. And 14 minutes from the arrival, it was on Facebook. Not meant with malice, not meant with harm. It was they're expressing their grief, you know, rest in peace. But we have to remember, social media travels so much faster than we do. We've got to give our staff time to make those notifications in person and properly. We owe that to our families. So I would simply say, keep yourself contained. Let your family know you're okay, but you can't give names. You can't do anything like that. You have to give the agency time to reach out to that family, to find them. We're a very mobile society. People are all over the place. Somebody's child doesn't need to see it on Facebook before mom gets a chance to get there to see him. We don't put any information out regarding names until we know the family's given us that clearance. We'll put down that we're assisting an agency, and immediately we start getting emails. Who is it? What's going on? Where is it at? I'm sorry, until the family authorizes the release, we won't publish that information because we don't want to be the ones putting it out there for maybe the aunt or the uncle to see it inadvertently. So we have to police ourselves. We have to give our organizations time to get out, to make these contacts with these families and do it in person properly, not seeing it on Facebook. And unfortunately, I can keep going on incidents where this has happened time and time again. And we are the cause, nobody else.
Oh, absolutely. Like I was telling you a little bit before the show, you know, same situation. A friend of mine, you know, his father passed away. He's in the military. His first recognition that he had of anything wrong with his father was he seen somebody posting something on Facebook about it. And it's just the family and the military was trying to make the proper notification. It's just, like you said, it's social media beating to it.
Correct. And it's just a sad state. And again, nobody means bad will when they do it. It's an expression of their grief. But yet in the same token, we have to think outside and, has the family been notified? Again, we don't release names or details until the family has given us permission to do so.
Now, in this, you were talking about making notifications in person, especially anything involving a line of duty death. We're talking about individuals, you know, if we get outside of a smaller volunteer organization, we might have a two-hour commute to work to a career department. Is there anything you can do as far as notifying your local fire department that lives or that provides service to that member's community and say, okay, hopefully we never have to use this service, but if it's available, could we call you to notify their family, or is that something you'd rather stay away from, or have you had any experiences with that?
Actually, we have. We're called by the Forest Service to make a notification. They wanted somebody in the area to go and make notification with the family because obviously the death occurred in another state and they needed to get word to the family before it got out. So we have been involved in that where we went to the family and we have asked an agency or reached out, hey, Fire Chief X, this is what happened. Can you go talk to the family? And this is what we're doing, and we're on our way. And so we have reached out and aided other organizations when the loss has occurred in another state, but yet the family's here. So there are means of doing that. And yes, we would reach out to our, again, we just, there's no way we can compete with the speed of Facebook and text messaging and Twitter. So, yes, the quicker we can get somebody to that family and get them involved and unfortunately express the news to them and so they at least hear it from a fire service member in a proper fashion, we would definitely do that. But part of that is our responsibility by keeping our information updated so we know where to find people, not just our house. Where does your wife work? Where do your kids go to school? Where do your parents live? These are all people that have to be notified in those times. And, you know, people are going 100 different directions, and it's hard to reel that in. So the more information you can provide to your organization for emergency contact, the quicker they're going to be able to find your family and embrace them and bring them into the fold and start this process, if God forbid they ever have to.
And that's an excellent point there. You talk about what school do your children go to. You know, we talk about notification of spouse or parents, but, you know, where do you find the individual's children in that event to make sure that, you know, they're taken care of and, they're not finding out the same way.
Yeah, correct. And, you know, kids in college, they go somewhere, other states. Mm-hmm. We definitely have a network of people we can lean on to that we can go and put somebody with them at that point if we have to and reach out to our brothers and sisters across the U.S. to make sure our family's taken care of.
Earlier, we kind of got off on our little tangent about text messaging and improper notifications. You were talking a little bit about if you do have the misfortune of the line of duty death and the importance of making sure that all of the paperwork and all the proper notifications and everything's done appropriately. What are some of those examples of those as far as making sure that we're doing the right thing if this does happen?
Well, one of the things I would suggest, suggest caution in releasing information to the media. The media, while many look at them as in somewhat of a negative fashion, they really can be there to help us, and we've actually utilized them to help us many times. But we need to release information cautiously and with some forethought. Just real briefly, benefits, federal benefits and state benefits are paid by acts of legislation are created which authorize these payments, and it outlines the parameters in which the payment can be made. One of the things in the federal legislation states that they will pay for fatalities that happen due to extraordinary incidents. So you can take a scene and just imagine the grief-stricken captain or firefighter that's there on the scene, and the media walks up and is like, "What's happened?" And this was just a routine dumpster fire. Mm. Well, the word routine does
exactly
not equal extraordinary. And while, again, it's very, very simple slip and a very innocent act, it makes it difficult for us to achieve benefits for these families when those things are published. One of the first things we do is we have to notify Washington, D.C. that a death has occurred, and they start pulling any media reports they can get. They start reeling in information all across. And this stuff is out there, and we have to battle it to undo some of those inadvertent acts at times. You know, simple things, looking at how you're titling your people. Another thing in the federal legislation that says they will pay for, in our case, firefighters who die in the line of duty performing extraordinary circumstances. But if you use the word probationary firefighter, that doesn't equal firefighter in the eyes of the legislation. It means they have not achieved that status yet, therefore they are not covered. So simple terminology of how you term your staff members within your internal documentation. They may serve a period of probation, but a probationary firefighter hopefully should not exist. I don't know if you can see the difference or parallel the difference, but a firefighter serving a period of probation is acceptable, but a probationary firefighter is not. Because it means they have not achieved the qualifications of a firefighter, therefore they are not, by law, cannot achieve that benefit.
And so, I know you had a situation in our area recently, not to go into great details with it, but with an individual who stopped to help and was identified and misinterpreted as a law enforcement officer. And, you know, there was some other circumstances with that you had to go about. I don't know how much detail you can go into or interested. But, again, another thing that we don't think about, that this benefit could have been taken away from his family when all he was doing was he was helping an individual, or thought he was helping an individual.
Correct. You know, the family, we've shared before, they know that we talk about these cases, and they're fine with it. Without going into great detail, yes, we did have a firefighter that stopped at an accident scene to render aid, what he thought was an accident, and it was actually a felony carjacking, and he was shot and killed. The media immediately put out off-duty firefighter shot and killed. So we did have to go back and get around that a little bit. We took a little sneaky approach in that one. But what the media didn't know is that agency actually had a policy that says if you're in a city vehicle and you come across an accident, you're required to stop and render aid. So that city policy actually placed him then on duty. So, but we had to overcome what was done within the media. The other thing that's out there, and it's kind of a unique scenario, probably applies more to law enforcement than fire service, but most definitely in this case applied, you could be off duty, and if you're killed because of the perception you're a public safety officer, you're covered for benefits, regardless whether you're on duty or off duty. So a police officer who is hunted down at their home on a day off is covered under this benefit act because they were killed because of the perception they were a public safety officer. And we did achieve that in this case in our area where, you know, this officer got out of his vehicle wearing blue trousers, a blue uniform shirt and a badge, approached the vehicle to render aid. Unbeknownst to him was a felony crime in progress. It was shot and killed because the guy that was being chased by people wearing blue uniform pants, a uniform shirt, and a badge. So obviously the perception of he was misinterpreted as a police officer. And so there are benefits in those cases. There's those extraordinary cases that are outliers. Heart attacks and strokes are another one. You're covered up to 24 hours after your last call. Physical fitness on duty is another one. You know, the physical fitness initiatives are strong, and for a while they were not covered, and it's taken some lawsuits and appeals and stuff like that to get them as consideration, and they are now considered as long as they meet certain criteria. Such as being a monitored program. Unfortunately, they don't clearly define all the criteria, but at least we have some latitude to work within now when filing for benefits. So the other thing is, if your agency suffers a loss, I would ask that you turn to whoever it is within your state that, I hate to use the word specializes in this, but we consider ourselves a specialty response team. No different than hazmat or anything like that, we train on this, and that is what our focus is, and our job is to know the ins and outs of the system to better help our families. So I'd ask that you turn to the specialist in your area to find out if something is covered or not covered. There's times when commuting is covered to or from work, but not always. And each one's a little different, and that's our job to know it, not yours, because you might encounter it, hopefully never in your career. And I think we were involved in 10 line-of-duty deaths last year. So, you know, cool. We do get exposure to this and work within the system. So reach out if you ever are, think that there might be a possibility, and let us help you through that.
On those, the 10 line of duty deaths that you mentioned, were all those within the state of Missouri, or do you guys ever provide assistance outside of the state?
Yes, last year actually we provided assistance in Iowa. We were in Nebraska on a service there. So, yes, we do go outside of the state and offer assistance on request, and we will never turn anyone down if we can at all make it happen.
And that's great. And, you know, not to say that it's good that you're busy. Hopefully that we would rather have a year where you don't have to ever move the trailer. Like you said, hopefully the wheels dry out on the trailer. But, you know, unfortunately, certain things are going to occur within our service.
Yes, our job's an inherent risk job, and we know that going into it. There's a lot of great people that put their lives on the line to make sure our public is safe. And, yes, sometimes, even though we try and be as safe as we can be, things do happen, unfortunately. So agencies do need to look at this. They need to look internally what they're doing. They need to evaluate, am I costing a family their benefits by how I'm titling my staff? Am I costing family benefits because I don't have the proper paperwork in place? We actually applied for benefits and lost because an agency could never come up with their articles of incorporation to prove that they were a legally authorized response agency. There's so many little criteria that have to be achieved when we file for benefits for families that it could be nothing the family has done or the firefighter has done that caused them to lose it. It could be stuff the agency has done or hasn't done. And our job is to create awareness of that. I know everyone looks at us as we go out and run the funerals and provide that, and that is a bulk of what we do, but I consider that the icing on the cake. The real cake is making sure the families have all the resources available to them, and we try and apply those resources and get them as much funding and support as we possibly can in the weeks, months, years, and decades to follow. When I say decades, we will be with one family for 18 years because the wife was pregnant at the time of the firefighter's death. Mm. One thing people may not know, that if we are successful in achieving the federal benefits, immediately on that family is now eligible for paid college tuition for the spouse and the children. So we're there to walk them through those things to know what they have available to them so the spouse can go back to school if they don't have a career path or need to upgrade to get a different type of job or a better job. So that when that boy turns 18 years old, we're going to be knocking on their door to make those applications so he has the opportunity to go to college.
If anybody has a local benefit, and I know within the metropolitan area here, we have the organization of Backstoppers, which for what they do for the families of the fallen police officers, firefighters, it's just outstanding.
Basically, they're an amazing organization.
Yeah, they step in and take care of any, you know, mortgages and tuitions and make sure that the family has what they need financially and really step up. And it's a super great organization. Let's say an organization like that does what they do within that area. Does any of that have any type of a repercussion on the amount that a family could get for a fallen firefighter's line of duty death benefit, or does that affect it at all?
Backstoppers, basically a good of the group type organization. No, that does not. The federal government does decrease the benefit amount on education by what the state pays, because there is a state benefit as well, but each covers some different things. So, you know, our job is to know how those benefits are covered, such as the federal may consider a laptop purchase, but the state would not. So, you know, okay, you got to put this over here, and then this one goes to that side, and they pay that, and they'll pay mileage to school and stuff like that. Housing expenses, the state does not. So, you know, we kind of know which, who to send the bill to, so to speak. But on the federal side, yes, they do decrease benefits for any state any state benefits that are paid are decreased. So you can't collect tuition from two organizations, you know, the state and the feds.
Now, is submitting all of this, is it one form of paperwork, or do we have to do one for the state, one for the feds? And...
Oh, everybody's got their own paperwork. It's a nightmare. I'll tell you, I'll tell you that on average right now, we're seeing about a two-year time frame before our families receive their federal benefits if we're successful in the application process.
Really?
It is not a fast process. It is very tedious on the family and the organization. We go back and forth getting paperwork together. We assist organizations in how they write the paperwork. There's trigger words we do not ever want to use. We always go on emergency calls. We don't have routine calls. Whether you run emergent or not to it, it was a request for immediate aid, and because we want to keep that routine out of there. We look and scan the documents. We have a panel of people. If we're uncomfortable with it, we can send it to for further review before we ever send it to the Bureau of Justice in Washington, D.C. for their evaluation of it. We look these documents over. We help process them. But the state is different than the feds. How the benefits are paid is different. The benefit amounts are paid differently. They're two complete separate monsters.
On filling out those, you know, we're talking about the forms and the benefits and everything. Is there anything you can do as part of that pre-planning process to fill these out beforehand, or is it pretty much we have to wait and hopefully never have to pull them out?
No, absolutely. I suggest that you add this to, you know, in career agencies and volunteer agencies. We ask that you, you know, we suggest that you put a packet of information together and that you review it once a year, whether it's January 1st or October 1st or whatever. But there is a document. It's called the Public Safety Officer's Beneficiary Form that I would encourage every agency to adopt. It is a form that, under certain circumstances, allows you to direct benefits to a person. And it's not going to apply to everybody because there are some parameters which the federal government's going to pay to regardless. No matter how much you may or may not like your spouse, they're going to get half of that money regardless. But there are opportunities that if you're not married at the time of your line of duty death, that you could afford that money to somebody to receive that. The kicker with the federal benefit – go ahead.
What happens in the circumstance of a divorce – with children that live with the other spouse?
Well, those are circumstances which we come out, we do about an hour and a half presentation to organizations who would like to hear it. If there's a divorce, the benefit on the federal side it's in excess of $300,000 right now. The benefit's always paid, if it's paid at all, it's always paid at the 100th percentile, so they never deduct it. If there's no eligible spouse, then eligible children get it. If there are no eligible children, eligible spouse gets it. If there's both children and spouse who are eligible, the spouse gets 50% and the eligible children share 50%. In the event of a divorce, if you have not taken proper or prudent planning through your divorce process and named a beneficiary to act on your behalf or a guardian for the child in your absence, the money is actually going to go to your ex-spouse. It goes to the guardian of the child. So the money from the federal government would then, at that point, be given to the guardian of the child, who would most likely be your ex-spouse. There's a lot of caveats that go with this form. It's a form that I like to explain in detail. We got a small slide presentation we put out. It's got about 8 different scenarios within it that talk about the form and how it can be used and how it can be of benefit. Let's say you got a firefighter who's 50 years old. He's divorced and his children are 26 and 30. Well, one would think that the public safety officer's benefit would go to the children, but they're not eligible beneficiaries in the eyes of the federal government. So actually they could not receive any benefit at all. The benefit may not be paid if there's nobody to receive it. It's got to be payable to an actual human being. It cannot be paid to a trust or an estate. Myself, having no kids, I had all my stuff set up to go to an estate to be dispersed according to my wishes. I would not receive those funds had I not filled out this form. This form allows you to direct those benefits in the case where you would not have a recipient otherwise. And that form's available on our team website. For anybody listening who would like to know, our team website is www.mofirefuneral.org. And that beneficiary form is available on our website for people to look at. It's available on the Public Safety Officers Benefits website through the Bureau of Justice. And it's also available through the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation's website. So you can get it many places. There's a couple caveats with that form. It's got to be printed on agency letterhead, and it has to be retained within the agency. The other thing is, if you're, as many firefighters, paramedics do, may work for more than one jurisdiction. You may work at a place, volunteer at a place, volunteer at two places. You have to have one on file at each place because the one that's going to count is the one that you were working for at the time.
So the one at one organization is not going to do anything.
It is not going to cover the other organization. That is correct. But benefits and beneficiaries, we don't like to look at it. We don't like to think about it. But, man, I tell you what, I have seen the federal money go to people that probably weren't necessarily – most definitely weren't intended to have it, but get it because somebody forgot to change their life insurance beneficiary at their agency. Sometimes it goes to an ex-girlfriend who, well, we were going to get married. I put her on my life insurance, and guess what? We didn't. I never changed it. Something happened. Guess who just got the money? So there's so many different caveats with it. I would ask that if you have a question on it, let us know. We'd be happy to try and explain it to you. We do have a PowerPoint that we put together that tries to outline it to the best we can so people understand it. And we also go out to organizations in our state and talk about it if they want us to.
And you were talking earlier about being able to look at the individual for your state that might be, for lack of better terms, the expert in these areas.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know the web address offhand for where they can go to look that up also?
You're going to go to firehero.org. That's the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation.
Sure.
And on there's going to be department resources, and you'll look for your local assistance state team, and they'll have a map there as to who your state representative is.
Okay, and, kind of with the subject, but also the subject, another thing for a lot of people who aren't familiar with you, and know some of your true passions. With the Firefighters Funeral Assistance Team, you were also one of the, I guess, primary members for coordinating the Greater St. Louis Area Firefighters Highland Guard. And I also personally know your passion as far as playing the bagpipes. And how did some of that come about? Not to get off of the subject, but how did you associate that with the Funeral Assistance Team?
Well, they're actually two completely separate organizations. I just kind of happen to be involved with both. They're actually completely separate from each other. A lot of people believe, I would like to say on the funeral team, we are not an honor guard. We are not a color guard. We arrange honor guards. We arrange color guards, or we assist in training the department to do it themselves. We have many awesome honor guards and color guards within our state, and we did not want to reinvent the wheel. We have great people doing a great job. Our job is to just kind of coordinate and call them and make arrangements to get them there. We are not an honor guard. We are not a color guard. And that is a common misconception that people say, I want the honor guard. Well, that's not us, but we'll help you find one. As far as the bagpipes go, I actually, our organization lost a member back in my hometown of Rock Falls, Illinois. Lost a member, and some bagpipers came in and played, and I thought, wow, that's a pretty awesome thing that they did. And when I moved to St. Louis, I sought out some people that would help me learn how to play.
That's awesome. And I know everywhere you go where you have the bagpipe, you know, the thing is if you go to like FDIC and as soon as the bagpipe was walking in the room, everybody else is just quiet. I'll never forget one of the first years going to the FFAM and you walked in with your bagpipes and the DJ just turned the music off and went for a break and just let you go. And that, you know, that's awesome.
And we love doing those types of events, trust me.
You mentioned the training for the honor guard. Do you do any type of training beforehand? I mean, again, talking about pre-planning, it seems like one of the things that we run into a lot of times, even, you know, we have the misfortune that has happened to participate recently in ceremonies where they're bringing home fallen soldiers. And some of our people that don't have any military history, they're not familiar with, you know, just simply how you stand at attention and the signs for getting a salute, things like that. Is there anywhere that somebody can go as far as providing a training or a training that's available to teach them those simple things for, you know, something as simple as that?
Well, again, because we're not honor guards, we're not trying to stick our nose into where it doesn't belong. We turn to some of our local resources. We have excellent honor guard people in our region, and we know where all of our honor guards lie within our state. We have a resource list of them. We reach out to them. That's their job. I'm not going to pretend to know their job. I let them determine, you know, teach people how to do those things. Outside of that, if people are interested, you know, there is a National Honor Guard Commanders Association. There's a National Honor Guard Academy people can go to and learn Honor Guard practices. But that is not our forte. We facilitate the honor guards, getting them there. We bring in when we assemble a team to do a line of duty death, we bring in an honor guard commander, and that is our liaison to honor guards, and they tell us, no, this is not going to work because of this, or yes, this will work because of that, or we need to have it done this way because this is proper protocol. That is their job, and we defer to them on that. But yeah, for training, if people want to get involved with that, you can talk to an area that has honor guard, or again, go to the National Honor Guard website and look there, and they'll have multiple resources as to how you can get involved. And you'll find that on the Fire Hero website as well.
Excellent. Perfect. As far as the, you know, like I said, the Highland Guard, not to get off the subject of the Highland Guard, but with that, separate from the Firefighters Funeral Assistance Team, you know, is there anything in particular that you guys do or any plug that you want to give for that group as far as what they do? And I know they play multiple events, and like I said, it's always great to listen to them, but, you know, anything that they've got coming up in the area or anything that they do that, you know, you want to give them a little bit of a shout-out for?
Our guys on the Highland Guard have just done a phenomenal job of representing the fire service, both with within our, you know, providing honors to our members, but also just out in the community doing different events for different people, and they see the fire department logo or the fire department patch and recognize, oh, you know, you're with the fire department, which one you're with, and talk about it. Those guys put so much effort into learning to play. They bear 95% of the expense themselves to do this, and they get very little in return other than the honor of providing honors to our fallen brothers and sisters. The commitment to that organization by our members is phenomenal. We hold practices 3 times a month. Again, the financial outlay is their own. They buy their own instrument. Bagpipes for decent sets start at $1,000, and if you want to spend $10,000, you can. You know, the kilts that we wear are $500 to $600 each. So, you know, I got to give a lot of props to those guys. They're doing these things on their days off. Most is on their own time, and they're out there representing the fire service in such a positive way. We've been in existence 10 years now, and it's been a pretty there's been some awesome experiences that we've achieved with that.
And that was a couple years ago. Some of our guys, they were listening to some stuff that Chief Lasky was doing in Louisville, and they were having I think it was the first or second, keeping tradition alive with the Honor Guard. And a couple of our guys, oh, well, will the department send us down there for that? We're like, we don't have an Honor Guard. They're like, yo, it'd be so cool to go.
Yeah. That organization has done a phenomenal job of putting together a premier camp to get the guys together. You know, we assemble several times a year from all across the U.S. to participate in the IFF Fallen Firefighters Memorial. It's held in Colorado Springs. The National Fallen Firefighters Memorial is held up in Emmitsburg, Maryland. And it's not uncommon to bring together 200 pipers and drummers. So at some point, you've got to start learning the same tune sets. And, you know, Chief Lasky's group, the Keeping Tradition Alive, has really grown and does a phenomenal job of bringing people together under non-funeral or non-ceremonial services, putting together a fun event, but also a learning experience so that you play together so when it comes time to do the big ones, you've played together, you've worked together, and you know what capabilities are out there. And hats off to them for achieving that. They've done a great job. They've opened up to just regular honor guards now, and it just is expanding. And I hear the rumors. I don't know for sure, but I've heard rumors they might try and take that on the road and move it around a little bit.
Really? Yeah, that's awesome. And you hit the nail on the head there. You know, a lot of times when you think about the honor guards and the bagpipers and things like that, it's a tragic event. It shouldn't be. It should be something that, you know, you see guys, like I mentioned a while ago, up at FDIC, whenever they walk into an establishment and everybody just stops to listen to them, it's a fun time. It's, you know, it's great to sit there and listen to them. It shouldn't be thought of as, you know, only calling upon in a tragic event. So, you know, that's great that they do that like that for the Honor Guards, and the Honor Guards are doing that to keep their heads up and to have a fun event and to practice and doing what they do.
Yeah, there's so many people across the state that we've run into that, I mean, they dedicate their times, their monies, their talents. And there's, like I say, back to our funeral team. You know, we've got five fully functional teams within our state. I'm just so proud of the accomplishments we've achieved in just a few years' time in assembling that. And the dedication time they put in, they tow these trailers around at their own expense. They don't get reimbursed for these things. We go out on deployment sometimes for 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 days. That's at their expense.
How does that work with the members that are on your team as far as their employers? Is it a preset agreement that they have with them? Or?
We have just recently started, because we've had such a success in membership with the funeral team. I'm going to brag on them a little bit. My Kansas City team just stepped up to the plate and did a phenomenal job. We just organized the largest training class that's ever been held by the National Fallen Firefighters, where we had 106 participants in Riverside, Missouri, for a training class. And then we followed that the next day with, I think we had 11 states represented at the next day's training for an advanced level class. And my team out of Kansas City stepped up to the plate, got everything running on just short notice, and made it fly without a hitch. We try and ask employers to have consideration on our members if they would. Sometimes the guys take vacation time. Sometimes they take personal leave. Sometimes they can't make it. As much as we'd like to go help every organization with active duty members, we just, you know, it's just not possible sometimes. So we will guarantee a team there for line of duty desks. We want to assist in any of the other desks through consulting on the phone. Sometimes we're able to go in person. But we try and encourage our employers to give us the time off that we need, and everybody's budgets are tight, so sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. We just instituted an application process to become members of the team, and in that we ask organizations to the chief submit a letter saying that they will give due consideration to the request when it comes in for line of duty desk and the deployment that comes thereof. So we can't make them happen, but luckily a lot of the members we pick up are from organizations that we've helped already, so they do understand the importance of it.
With that, with forming a team, you know, you've kind of already been through a lot of this and set some of the groundwork for it. My state doesn't have something like that, and I wanted to start something. Who are some of the players or some of the members that you look at and say, hey, I want you to help me with this, or who are the ones that you look for the assistance with that?
Well, I mean, we've actually been a model. We've used our team concept model to assist other states in getting up and running. We've turned our documents over, how we got to where we are without a problem. We get all those. You know, we'll help any state out we possibly can. And the network, again, through the National Fallen Firefighters, they have the established program. Actually, one of the things that our training in Kansas City region, Riverside, Missouri, just accomplished is we actually had about 30 police officers in this. This is something law enforcement does not have available to them as widespread as we do. And the National Fallen Firefighters is reaching out and bringing them in and allowing them to get this training to take it to so it's available for law enforcement as well. I think we had law enforcement from Kansas, obviously Missouri, Connecticut, that were in attendance to get the training as well.
And there, a few years after you guys were up and running, am I correct that Missouri law enforcement, they also established their own team?
Yes, they have a team. They've kind of modeled it in a similar fashion to what we have accomplished. We work hand in hand with each other because obviously on the big services, you know, we need traffic control and law enforcement presence, and they usually like to have our big flags and stuff like that, and all the bagpipers play together. And so we work very closely with our law enforcement funeral team. We've actually ourselves have done several law enforcement services. The reason we were involved in Riverside, Missouri, is when their police officer was struck by lightning serving in Joplin, our fire team assisted their newly forming law enforcement team in coordinating that funeral for them. So we went out there, and they shadowed with us, and we've got a great relationship with their team, and it works out exceptionally well.
That's great. And you know, one thing, some of your initial members that you have on your team, just kind of, you know, to give a shout out for your organization and some of the people that aren't familiar with it, I believe maybe a year and a half ago, I attended one of your training sessions in Cape Girardeau in southern portion of Missouri.
Yep.
And didn't realize that actually some of your members, extremely active members, and the people that I knew didn't really know that they were associated with your team, had actually personally experienced a spouse line of duty death. I mean, that's one of the things to your team is some of the people that have actually had to live through a tragedy of this sort.
Well, that's one thing I'll tell you that the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation is promoting, and we also believe in it very well. Yeah, I'm going to give a shout-out to Harriet Vaucher with our she serves with our St. Louis team.
Amazing woman. She's awesome.
Well, yeah, her first husband was killed in the line of duty, and the things that we are offering families today were definitely not made available to her, and she knows the hardship that comes with this. Her husband, Don, is very supportive of her, comes around to all the trainings with her, just extremely supportive. And, yeah, it, we've got some phenomenal people that serve on our teams, and incorporating the survivor concept is something we really want to do. At some point, we want to try and establish a survivors network within our state. That's one of our goals we'd like to do, so that we can get our survivors together, make them aware of the different ceremonies that are going on, that, you know, if they'd like to participate, just to create that network out there. And we encourage survivors on our teams. I haven't lived through the things they're living through. So through the eyes of another survivor, at least they can say, you know what, I've walked in your shoes to some degree. And I think that's a resource or an asset that I hope I never have to experience, but, you know, that's something I just cannot offer to those families. And they embrace that many times, that they've got that survivor there and they make that connection. And it's without that, she just serves a phenomenal position within our organization, as do so many people. Again, I've got 5 team leaders that head up each of those trailers. They're responsible for inventorying them. They're responsible for making maintenance on them and keeping everything up and running and toting them around all over. And a great team definitely doesn't exist without a lot of participation by its membership.
Definitely. And like I said, one of the things that before I took that class, I never knew that she had actually ever experienced that. I you know, she had been a support member of basically a next-door department or fire district, admired the woman for what she did as a support member for that organization. But then after listening to her story that particular night, what made it most interesting to me is she was actually the dispatcher working on duty the night that incident occurred. And, you know, she talks about leaving there and not knowing what to do and just went home and knew she had to take care of the kids and the family and keep the family going. And, I mean, just not knowing this about her. And, I mean, that was one of the things that, again, I admired your organization before that, but just listening to the survivor story with that, and, you know, unless we really sit down and listen to these individuals and understand their stories and how much more in depth they are. You know, a lot of times we read NIOSH reports and we read things about them, but we don't really
really happened there.
Exactly.
I tell you, I have been very lucky with the participation with the funeral team and being involved on the national level through the National Fallen Firefighters. We go to the survivors conferences for our update trainings. That's where we learn about the new legislation, the changes that are happening, and how we need to navigate around those changes to get the benefits for our families. But one of the things I just cherish about that is I get to hear these survivor stories. I get to sit down and talk with them one-on-one and listen to their story. You see the face behind that NIOSH report.
Absolutely.
And, you know, you make connections that are long living. I'm going to send out some props to Jason Hildebrand with Clayton Fire, who just he's putting together a stair climb to benefit the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation. At one of our update trainings, I met a lady and sat on a park bench for probably over an hour listening to the story of her son who was killed in the World Trade Centers on September 11th. And, you know, they had the 9/11 memorial in Forest Park for the 10-year anniversary. We actually got his flag and brought it to the fire station, and Jason has plans to dedicate it here at his first stair climb, and our agency's actually flying his mom in. So these connections that are made are amazing, and to listen to these survivor stories, both the good and the bad. You know, you hear how departments walked away from the families and they had nobody to lean on. They didn't know where to turn. And departments didn't know what to do, so they just kind of walked away. And, you know, it happens sometimes. But you hear the good and the bad, but everybody's story is amazing, and it's a pretty neat process to be involved in.
Definitely. And even before I heard the story associated with Harriet, you know, I went to a class it was actually at FDIC, given by the fallen Firefighters Foundation. I can't remember if it was, it was something about families of line of duty death, and one of the individuals who's on there was a woman named Sharon Purdy, and I remember her name.
I know Sharon quite well, actually.
Yes, she gave me a card at the end of the presentation, and that card sits with the dime taped to the back of it, and that card sits right there on the corner of my desk. And even today, people come up, why do you have that sitting there? And, you know, listening to her story with, you know, not only did she have the tragedy of being involved in an incident pertaining to a line of duty death, but the line of duty death was her husband.
Yeah.
She was the medical person that had to work on that individual. It's just,
yep.
You know, listening to these individuals and the things that they went through, and just, you know, you can't ever say, I know what you're going through, because you don't. You have no idea. And sitting down listening to these people, you understand that. You have no idea what they're going through.
Oh, exactly. You know, I sat on that park bench listening to Miss Mullen talk about her son. He is an avid music lover. And, yeah, she gave me a patch and a mask card and said, I know you're a bagpiper. Please carry this with you whenever you bagpipe. And I do. It stays with me every time I put on the kilt. It's there with me. And it's just something that, you know, those are the things that don't get put in paychecks that nobody can ever replace either. Their stories are phenomenal. Each one's amazing in its own regard. And I consider myself pretty lucky if I get a chance to hear another one. You know, just listen to the families, letting them talk, letting them express what has happened and how it affected their lives. And the really neat thing is how they've turned that into something positive. You know, locally we've got the Ryan Humbert Foundation that puts people through to be paramedics. We've got the Sail Foundation for Leonard Riggins that benefit children in other ways. They take their tragedies and turn them into positive things, and it's amazing to see and watch that process evolve.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and that's, you know, unfortunately it takes a tragedy for us to realize, you know, what a person actually means, not only to us, you know, personally and individually, but, you know, to our service and to our organizations.
Well, yeah, I agree completely. It's the family stories are amazing. The impact these people have within their own organizations as well. You know, I mean, the loss isn't just the families; it's the loss of the agency as well, and that takes a lot to overcome. Also, you know, so the agencies have to find a way to heal, and so we, you know, when we go out on these calls, we're not looking at just one aspect. We have to look at the whole thing and, okay, what does this agency need? Are they able to run their calls still? Are they not? Who can do it for us? Things of that nature. So,
and that's something, you know, again, we don't realize beforehand. Once you have that tragedy occur within your organization, what do you do? Because everybody, again, our fire service family, we're associated with that. We're just as heartbroken as your biological family, so what do you do as far as your emergency runs, and what do you do as far as your staff needs and manning your buildings? And,
oh, exactly. You know, and those are all things that have to be addressed if it's a line of duty type incident. We come in and we look at those and we sit down and talk with the leadership of the organizations and what can your guys do and what can't they do, and have you talked to your guys and asked them what they can and can't do? Some people are like, I'd have to keep working because it keeps my mind off of things. And others are like, I got to get out of here. I can't do this right now. And one's not right, one's not wrong. It's just we have to accommodate and make sure that, because frankly, people are still going to call 911, and people are still going to expect us to show up, and people are still going to expect us to do our job. So, you know, that's some of the things we do talk about when we come into an organization, is looking at the resources and do they feel they're able to keep going and responding on their own, or do we need to reach out to our mutual aid partners and find station coverage and somebody to run the calls? Those are all part of the things that we look at when we come into an organization and help them.
You know, and sometimes people are too afraid, and I guess afraid isn't the appropriate word, but too proud to turn the reins over and say, okay, here, take care of my organization for a week. will be back, but take it. And there will be somebody that will be willing to step up and take it over for you.
Yes, and we've had organizations that it has been a week, and we assisted them, and they had mutual aid coverage for a week in their station, and there's nothing wrong with that. It was absolutely not a problem to make happen. People were coming out of the woodwork to try and step up and help that organization, and in your high-profile incidents, that happens routinely. But each organization is different. That's why, while we have a standard guideline when we come into an organization, say this is what we do for line of duty death, we have to ask that organization, can you do this before you ever offer it to the family? Do you have a ladder truck that you can hang a flag from? Or can we get one? Because if we can't, we don't ever want to offer that to the family. So we have to assess what is available to them, and that goes as well as looking station coverage, what's available, what can we accomplish, what can't we accomplish, what are their needs, critical incident stress teams, all those things play into it, and it's just a big overall assessment of what their situation is, and every situation is different. We've been in agencies that have dirt floors on their engine base, and to the biggest urban departments, in Missouri. So we've assisted in all those different levels, and each one has their own challenges.
Exactly. And you hit it right there. It doesn't matter what your budget is as far as your organization. We all are up, where we could have a line of duty death, and that's be prepared for it one way or the other. And know who we can count on, be prepared beforehand, pre-plan what we can, and it doesn't matter if we have a thick budget or if we're just making ends meet.
Well, and the other thing that we try and do, and this is as much, you can include this in any level, whether it's line of duty, active duty, retiree, is we try and talk to the agency and stress to them, again, what you do is going to be an expectation. So, I had an organization that called and said, well, we want to do this because he was special. Well, the question back was, tell me who in your organization isn't.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And with that, it's like if you spend $1,000 to buy a catered meal for this death, the next family is going to have that same expectation. And can you meet that expectation? It's not meant to be disrespectful. It's meant to be equal and not show favoritism one over the other. Everybody's services may be different, but we try to offer the same things so that everybody has the same opportunity in the same scenario. So an active duty member, we try and offer the same things, and that's what having that guideline will do for you. It will keep you on track and saying, no, this does not meet our criteria. Yes, this does, and we're able to do this for you. We suggest maybe they even look at putting financial limits, such as can you... we're going to donate $250 towards flowers. Okay, we've got a standard now that we can meet and do it the same way every time. What did we do the last time? What did we do this time? Those are all questions that come up, and we really encourage you to take a peek, take a look, and set something up now so that you do it the same way the next time and you don't overextend yourself and get caught disappointing a family.
Yeah, and like you said, I think you hit the nail on the head there. Make sure that it's something you can do every single time. Whether it be the instance you used earlier with a member's wife, the same thing there versus a line of duty death versus an active member, death or natural causes or whatever it is. Make sure it's something you can do every single time. Don't overextend yourself the first time, because what are you going to do the next time?
And the whole, one of the reasons we pre-plan the large structure fire, the high-rise fire, or whatever it is in your area that you have, you do that so that you come in with a basis to start enacting, and you know what's going to happen, and it keeps you on track. And that's what pre-planning this does as well. It keeps you on track and keeps you from going outside of your bounds, because it's very if you don't have that to back you up, it's very hard to turn to that family and say, no, I can't do this, or that doesn't follow a guideline, when you don't have a guideline to follow. And so many times we hear, whatever you want. Well, got to be careful with that.
Yeah.
You got to be careful with that.
Yeah. You hand them the moon the first time.
Correct. Yep. And it's, again, it's just, you know, the agency that says, well, we want to put him on the fire truck because he was, you know, he was special. Well, who in your agency is not?
Exactly.
You know, and that's a fair question to ask. Who in your agency is not? Every person that's part of an organization is important to that organization.
Well, I know it doesn't seem like it, but we've been chatting for quite a while already. It's been really interesting, informative. Jason left us for a little while, and I think he had a little bit of time to sit back down. And you out there again?
Yeah, we're here. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
I'm on speakerphone. Frank's here, too. We've had a busy day.
Oh, it sounds like it. Yeah, Brian took it away from us. He hit it out of the park.
Well, thank you. Like I said, thanks for the opportunity to talk about this. Obviously, it's something I hold very dear to my heart, being able to work with these families and have the dedication of our team members across Missouri has just been it's a pretty neat experience. That's an understatement.
Hey, Brian.
Yeah.
Brian, is there a way that if people had more questions or wanted to ask something privately, that they could get a hold of you somehow, or a website or some way that they can contact you to find out more, to have a more private conversation about these things?
Oh, definitely. You can go to our team website. Again, it's www.mofirefuneral.org, MOFIREFUNERAL.org. You can contact me through there, and also should have my phone number on there. There's an 800 number, toll-free number on there for emergent responses that goes to the dispatch center. But my cell phone number is also on the website. You can call me direct. You can email me. I'd be happy to entertain any questions, conversations, or concerns over anything we discussed.
And you also mentioned earlier that your organization is hosting a stair climb event.
That's not our organization. That's being organized by Jason Hillebrand from Clayton Fire.
Those
funds are going to be funneled to the National Fallen Firefighters to support the survivors programs. And the way it tied in is I met the lady at the survivors conference who's actually going to be flying here to see us dedicate her son's flag and say a few words that day. So we're actually going to have a family member of one of the firefighters lost in the World Trade Center and hear her story. And it all started because we got involved with the National Fallen Firefighters, and they afforded us an opportunity to get us additional training, and it's just kind of evolved from there.
If anybody's interested in the event in Clayton, they got a website or anything they can go to get information on that? Or
hit Clayton Fire Department's website. It's also on Facebook for the Clayton 9/11 Memorial Climb. Or you can hit the City of Clayton's website. It's located there. I'm sure it's located on our union's website, I would believe, as well. It's Local 2665. So I'm sure has it posted there. I know he's getting the word out any way he can. So he's trying to get information out there to get participation and raise some funds for the survivors programs.
Perfect. Excellent. With that, in closing, you have anything else you wanted to add as far as any events coming up or anything that you guys would be as far as notification information? Gave us our website. We've actually had that posted in our chat window. We'll put that on our website. Anything else have coming up that you'd like to mention? Or
nope, we're status quo at this point. We're just kind of, like I say, unfortunately, we're waiting till the next time we're needed, and hopefully that doesn't happen.
Hopefully it's not soon.
Yeah, we agree with that. So,
Jason, Frank, anything else in closing?
No, I just would encourage people, and we'll try and get the links up on our website and on our website, our Facebook site. We'll try to get all the information and links to the Missouri Fire Funeral Assistance Team and the Clayton 9/11 Stair Climb for the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation. I know I talked to Jason the other day, and they're really wanting more people to come turn out. They've got plenty of room left, and they're encouraging people to get out there. I know he's coming close to printing T-shirts, so if you're thinking about doing and want a T-shirt, you need to get in there pretty quick. So we'll try and get all those links up, and Brian, if we post something that's not right, let us know. We'll change it, make sure we got the right addresses up there, and we just encourage you to get out and participate and support the families of the fallen firefighters.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to talk about one of my passions, and hopefully, if nothing more, we've got some people to at least think about it for a little bit. Hopefully they'll act on it and then put it away and not deal with it till another year when it's time to review the information sheets and then stuff it away again and hopefully never have to use it in an emergency.
Oh, exactly. You know, like we said at the beginning, it's something people don't want to talk about, but, you know, it's one of the most important things we need to bring out and make sure that we're prepared now. If we ever do have to experience a tragedy, we're prepared for the unfortunate event.
That's absolutely correct. So thank you again for the opportunity
okay.
to shed some light on this. I appreciate it greatly.
Oh, Brian, thank you very much. Can express, you know, how grateful we are to come on here. You and to all the members of the Missouri Firefighters Assistance Team, what you do across the state of Missouri and neighboring states and bringing our attention to it, the education you brought to us, you know, we can't express our thanks to you enough. So again,
well, thank you very much,
Brian.
Got a great team that we're doing.
Oh, you guys are stellar. It's a superb group.
All righty. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, Brian. Thank you very much.
Bye.
A couple other things, like Jason said at the beginning, a couple classes coming up, primarily across the Missouri area, Central Missouri and Boone County, September 29th and 30th, Cole County, which is located in Jefferson City right in Central Missouri, September 22nd. St. Joseph is the week of October 24th. Is that correct, Jason?
Yeah, October 24th, and we're trying to nail down a date, but it looks like that last week in October will be hopefully at West County Fire, too, West County EMS and Fire for a bailout class.
Okay. Since you got to join us at the beginning and the end, anything you'd like to interject?
No, just thanks for all the support that everybody's been giving us. And like you said, we had a little bit of a break and looking forward to getting back into it this coming weekend and having a busy fall and actually already keeping an eye out for FDIC. Make sure you get on the FDIC website. They've got some specials going. They're going to give back some things this year to firefighters, so you need to get on there and take a look at FDIC. It's going to be here before you know it. Start keeping an eye out for early housing and, you know, keep an eye out for fire engineering for all that information.
And like Brian was mentioning earlier, check out Clayton Fire Department. If you do a Google search of Clayton Fire Department in Missouri, there'll be links on there to go to their stair climb event that they're having. If you're able, please be sure to participate in that and give them all the support that they need.
Yeah, and I've already got those links. I've shared the 9/11 Memorial Stair Climb on our Facebook site. We'll try and get it up on our website so they can get registered. And then I forgot it in the chat room. So share, get it out there. And if you're in the St. Louis area or the immediate metropolitan area, get down here and run those stairs.
All right. With that, I think I know you didn't get to join us a lot tonight, but the information Brian gave us, you know, excellent conversation. You know, just talking to him, you can tell his passion associated with the funeral assistance team and what he does. And again, a lot of people from our area don't really understand what he's done for not just our area, but the state and establishing this team and what these people do whenever they show up as far as assisting departments that have been grief-stricken by a departmental death or a line-of-duty death. And it's just, you know, hats off to these guys for stepping up and what they do to them. And again, you can find them mofirefuneral.org. Visit their website. A lot of good information there as far as documents and pre-planning the event. You know, we've said it over and over. It's not something that's easy to sit down and talk about, but again, it's a necessity. It's something that we have to do to be prepared if, you know, a misfortune occurs within our organization.
Yeah, I know Brian came into our department and did a proactive meeting with us as far as what kind of paperwork we need to have available, what kind of benefits that, you know, that are available to us, and a documentation that we need to have in the event of emergency, and have all those documents and items ready so that it makes their job easier, but it also benefits the family in receiving those benefits in a timely manner.
Absolutely. All right. With that, I think we've wrapped up another one. Unless you have anything else you can think of.
I don't think so. Sorry I missed most of the show. It's been a busy day. I appreciate everything you guys have done.
Oh, it was a good time. But you can catch it in the archives.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'll download and listen to it.
Absolutely. All right. Again, thanks to Pine Engineering, Chief Halton, for giving us this opportunity. Hopefully everybody got a little bit of something out of tonight. Any information you'd like from us, you can check us out at enginehousetraining.com. All of our email addresses are on there, contact information. Be happy to hear from you. Check out our website, and we'll see you on the next one.
All right. See you, Gary. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Jason.
Bye.